Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Foreclosures and short sales keep pulling home prices down. New home construction starts are anemic. Banks are tightening credit. Unemployment is high. People are doubling up, sharing homes. And those Americans who do have steady incomes are reluctant to put their money into housing when prices could continue to fall. This hour On Point, the new American housing market. You can join the conversation. Are we there yet? At the bottom of the housing bust, how's it look in your town? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today from Washington is Diana Olick, who covers real estate for CNBC and on her blog Realty Check. Diana, thanks very much. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me again.
And with us from Boston, Carl Case, Professor Emeritus of Economics at Wellesley University, co-creator of the Case-Shiller Index, which tracks housing prices across the United States. Carl Case, Chip Case, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
Diana, let's come first to you. Take us through these recent numbers. It just looks like down, 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 and after we've been down a lot already on housing.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing's looking very good right now. What we saw last week was, as we call it, the official double dip in home prices. That is, prices going lower than they were when they dipped down after the end of the or after the crash. Mm-hmm. So we've seen that. Then we saw housing starts yesterday really pretty abysmal, and permits for new construction not so good either. So home builders, their confidence is still very low. They're not looking to build anymore. They're saying buyer traffic is very slow. Their expectations for sales are slow. And on top of that, you've got this credit crunch going on. I mean, we just got the weekly numbers from the Mortgage Bankers Association. And while refis were up 13% last week, thanks to these really low mortgage rates, you know, we're down at 4.6% now. Purchase applications were down, and that's just not something you want to see during the spring housing season. We're in the heart of it. We should be seeing those purchase applications for a mortgage go up, but credit is tight.
Credit is tight, but this is not even getting applications. Does that mean that the foot on the brake is the foot of the banker or the foot of the buyer?
That's the foot of the buyer. But the question is, you know, when these are applications, which means a lot of people may be submitting more than one application because they know that they're not may not be eligible with one bank. They may try another. What we're seeing is that demand is just not there for the what I call the organic buyer. That is just the regular person who decides they want to either sell their home and move up or the first time buyer. What we are seeing is investor interest, and that is in distressed properties, buying foreclosures and short sales, and they're paying all cash mostly. So you're not seeing that in the mortgage applications. And we saw, I believe it was in March, the highest level ever, the highest share of all cash purchasers that the realtors had ever reported. So a lot of investors in there, which is not a bad thing. Trust me, in this market, we need everything. But a lot of those organic buyers are really turning toward renting.
Organic buyers and renting. I'll ask Carl Case the same thing. But Diana, as you look at the housing market in this country, with this, it's gone down again here. You call it the official double dip. Is this the bottom, or how do we know, or when will we know?
You know, I keep hearing this phrase, the sawtooth recovery. So it's something like a saw in that it's going to go up, it's going to go down, it's just going to bounce along the bottom for a while. Prices are under pressure right now, and that's largely due to the mix of what's selling. That is, if only short sales and foreclosures are what's selling right now, and those are at distressed prices, well, that's just going to bring the median price down. That's just mathematics right there. What we need to do is get more of those regular sellers into the market. I just did a report on CNBC showing that the number of new listings of regular homes that is not distressed, not foreclosures, not short sales, has dropped significantly in the first quarter of this year. Again, we're in spring. We should see people putting their houses on the market. But folks are afraid of falling prices, catching the falling knife. So what we're seeing is just the banks pushing out these REO, these bank-owned properties, onto the market, not the regular higher-priced ones. And so we will start at some point when demand comes back to see the prices come up just by virtue of what is being listed on the market and what's selling.
Carl Case, do we ever go back to anything like most Americans alive today knew for nearly all their lives in the housing market? Or is that all finished, overdone? And if it is, where are we now?
Well, I agree with Diana. We're stuck in the mud, and so the vision of 2 or 3 years out is very difficult to get a handle on because of all this foreclosed property and the huge inventory of people who would actually like to sell. I think there are a ton of people out there. If things began to turn a little bit and people began to sense that prices were really stabilizing, would jump. I mean, they say there are 12 million underwater properties that can't sell, but can't sell is a tricky word. I've had economist friends of mine call me and say, I can't sell my house. Actually, Loudon Wainwright has a song out called I Can't Sell My House, which saves his marriage. And people who say that are saying they can't sell it for what it's worth in their minds, or they can't sell it for what they're going to have to cough up in terms of cash to close the deal. So it's hard to see how that's going to come around to stability anytime in the near future. And certainly the attitude toward homeowning is changing dramatically. Bob Schiller and I do surveys every mm-hmm. year, and you can see people who were very, very confident, people who bought homes 10, 15, 20 years, actually go back 35 years, and it was always the case that they could expect house prices to rise. It's part of their saving. If you actually calculate the savings rate during those years we were despairing of it, being so low, mm-hmm. if you add in the capital gain and the increase in the value of their assets, the savings rate was actually quite high. Then it went dreadfully south when prices fell, and people suddenly realized that prices can and do fall. They fell 35% nationally and over 50% in some markets, and that's not been enough to bring buyers into the market because they're nervous. They're still buying a big asset. They're borrowing money to do it. When they do that, they sometimes forget they own the whole enchilada. And so it's leverage, it's fear, and it's hard to see that fear breaking anytime soon.
So, but Diana, here we are. We've got a big country, 300 million plus people. It's slated in this century to grow by leaps and bounds again. The UN says it's going to go to 500 million. I mean, there's a lot of housing out there and maybe more McMansions than we can now afford. I don't know, but how do you find a new equilibrium after a big bouncing like this, a big crash and sawtooth bump along the bottom?
I mean, I think it's all about confidence. Some folks say, well, there should be more government stimulus in the form of another homebuyer tax credit. I don't buy that, because if you put that tax credit in place, yes, it's going to bump up sales and prices again artificially, only to drop off again when that credit ends. It's going to have to be about whether people decide that home ownership again is a good investment. I mean, Fannie Mae actually put out a survey recently saying that a majority of Americans do believe that home ownership is a good investment. Now, it's, of course, down from 10, 20 years ago when a vast majority thought it was. But people do believe in home ownership, but it's just they have to understand it's not going to be the ATM machine that it was during the housing boom. As you say, there is demand out there. There's pent-up demand of people who are getting jobs. We're seeing a little bit of a job recovery, not in the young ages that we'd like to see in the demographics of those first-time home buyers. And again, you're not seeing the kinds of jobs that are going to give people enough money to buy a house. You're seeing more service sector jobs rather than professional jobs being created. But again, what's going to help people get that confidence is to see the prices stabilize. And that may have more to do with the banks and the foreclosures than anything else. You know, we've got all kinds of lawsuits, agreements, negotiations going on between states' attorneys general. And the question is, how is that all going to pan out? And how are we going to find out what happens with all of these distressed properties, not just the ones in foreclosures, but mm-hmm. you've got over 4 million properties that are 90 plus days past due on their mortgages. What's going to happen to those? Are they all going to foreclosure? Are some going to get modified? Are those modifications going to work long term? Are we going to see principal write down, which is, of course, a big issue in the settlements with the banks and the state AGs? If you start to see that distressed property volume diminish, and that can put a bottom on prices, then confidence will come back and people will jump in. I mean, there is demand. We're not seeing quite the immigration that we saw before. We are definitely not seeing the household formation that we saw in the past. But there are people out there who do want to buy. They're just afraid to.
Carl, where do you see a new equilibrium, if anywhere out there? And what does it look like when it arrives?
Did you ask me, Tom? I'm
sorry. Yes, please. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, the long run is, if you look over a longer period of time, it's in the past been driven, equilibriums have been driven by the new production of housing and removals from the system, as well as on the other side, new households being formed. Diana's got just sort of pointed that out. If you look at new households, it's really quite extraordinary. And the numbers are all over the chart. We really don't know whether we're building a new kind of demand or not. You've got immigration down, but we don't really know by how much until we get the census sorted out. Greg Mankiw wrote a book called an article called The Baby Boom, The Baby Bust in the Housing Market 20 years ago that got it wrong because we had 10 million people we didn't know we had. The fear is that when we get the final count in the 2010 census on households, that we've lost 5 million and they may be coming back, they may not. People are doubling up. But certainly the projections that we would be running a million housing household formations this year and next year were just way off. And so we're seeing actually, if you look at the census numbers, negative household formation, which I thought we'd never see. On the other side, starts. It's really incredible what we've done to the construction industry. I mean, we used to crank it down below a million to slow the economy down. In the past, we had a number of cycles like that, and all of a sudden, this time it went down to 500,000, which is a 70% reduction in production, and that would have been enough to bring any of the post-war recessions at least tighten up the market, but it hasn't done it. We're down at 60-70-year lows on housing starts, and it's not going anywhere.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the American housing market and what's going on. Home prices down again. Banks super tight on mortgages. Everybody looking for the bottom. Diana Olick joins us this hour from Washington. She covers real estate for CNBC. Her blog there is Realty Check. Chip Case is with us. He is co-creator of the Case-Shiller Index, tracks housing prices right across this country. Chip Case, Diana Olick, let's go right to our listeners. Ben in Blythewood, South Carolina. Ben, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
Well, I've been living in my home now for 6 years here in South Carolina.
Okay.
South Carolina has fortunately a huge retirement community, and a lot of people come here to retire because they're getting their pensions from elsewhere and they can afford some of the larger homes here. But what I've seen in the past several years is there was a great boom in the market. There were a lot of people that may have been marginal candidates for owning a home. They got into perhaps homes that were a little bit larger or more costly than others to maintain. And basically, when the job market went south, effectively, we went through what I call a market dimple, which means it's kind of like we're going in the reverse of a housing bubble.
Dimple sounds kind of cute, but to a lot of people, it's not such a cute experience, Ben.
No, it's not. And I have a lot of friends that own homes out here, and they were in some beautiful homes, and they had to make some additional accommodations or they had to give them up. But one of the things you have to factor in when you go into these investments is that you have to sustain them with your income.
Do you think and income's been, of course, a huge issue for people who are out of work? They just don't have it, or maybe they're back at work but not with the same income. Do you see it all coming back, Ben, or, you know, what kind of equilibrium? Where do we settle down here?
Personally, I think it will come back. However, there will be, I agree with your experts, there will have to be a major adjustment across the board, and that's in terms of the bankers, realtors, and the builders. And for the type of market economy we have, that takes a long time. So myself personally, I'm digging in, making my home work for me in the best way possible that it needs to. And that's all I can really do. I don't have too many other options.
Making it work as a place to live, maybe not as a piggy bank, certainly not a cash machine these days. I mean, Carl Case, you know, maybe comeback just isn't the right phrase to use anymore. Adjustment's more like it, and the adjustment looks one way.
There's a huge adjustment that has to be made yet. During the boom, the caller's exactly right. During the boom, which was different in different places. It behaved differently in different places. But by and large, during the boom, in total, we added $10 trillion to household wealth. We added $5 trillion in additional land value, mostly on the coast, and $5 trillion of new structures. Now we've given back about six of that. And it's hard to hand out to people assets of the magnitude that we handed out. I've been through it myself, where I made more money living in my house than I made working. And you get used to that, and you get used to having that wealth. When it goes away, everyone runs from it. Right now, there's $1 trillion on the balance sheet of the Fed in mortgage-backed securities, backed by houses that aren't worth what they were worth when the mortgages were. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of stuff in Fannie and Freddie. So that there's the paper market that has to react. And this is why the government's dragging its feet on resolving the Fannie and Freddie crisis. Because a lot of those losses that were occurred are now in the hands of the people who have their hands on the paper. In addition to that, households have lost wealth. They can't move. So having said all of that, if you look at households, and these are the ones in the more traditional market, as time goes on, more and more pressure to get exchanges going is going to be there. I have a feeling, and this is just completely out of the blue, I have a feeling that tomorrow there's going to be some numbers that may surprise us. I don't know. Existing sales are coming out tomorrow. If it's down, then we're clearly due for a few more months of this downward trend. But if there's some signs of life, there are so many people out there who would like to get their property on the market, who are holding the line on pricing, and any sign of optimism would get them to move. If you look at what's happened to the affordability.
But Chip, let me ask you, if those people, you know, suddenly say, hooray, I'm ready to sell, doesn't that just drive everything down again? No, there's so many more homes on the market.
There's the baby boom echo coming in,
mm-hmm.
and there are people who I'm watching the street. I mean, this is clearly anecdotal. I'm an economist, and I shouldn't even be saying it. Mm-hmm. But you talk to people about whether people are coming to open houses or not, and they seem to be now that they weren't back in February. And you have to remember that the data, particularly our own data, lag. So we've only given February numbers because we don't believe the ones yet in March and April. But there's a lot of data coming out in the next two weeks. What we've seen so far this month, Diane is absolutely right, looks grim. But I'm an eternal optimist, and I think something will begin to show some light, and then you'll see some of this begin to clear. The other thing that is bothering me is what's going on with some removals. I was reading some work on Cleveland. It talked about 9,000 of these properties that are being taken in foreclosure being condemned and torn down. If removals are that high, then that adds another layer of complexity to this count of households chasing after units that are coming online. That process of people hovering over the market and waiting is in full swing, and I do think we're going to know more in 2 months than we know now.
Diana, I'm trying to get a feeling for what we should even wish for here. People who own homes and who have, you know, had those visions of sugar plums dancing in their head for years about how much they're worth and have counted on that maybe for savings, retirement, you name it, they need those higher prices back. On the other hand, you've got a big generation of 20-somethings, an echo boom, as Carl says now, coming on. They may not have jobs that are going to support anything like those home prices, and they would benefit if home prices came down. Is it clear what's best for the country here?
Well, you're talking about affordability, and I want to go back to what the caller said. I mean, he used the word investment when it comes to a house, and Professor Case was talking about the value of the homes and what we're going to see in prices and bottoming, and we may very well see a home sales bump up when we get that report tomorrow because people are getting back in, but, you know, prices always lag sales on the way up and on the way down, and so that doesn't mean if we see the sales coming back, that's great, but it doesn't mean that prices are coming back. Now, that said, when you talk about home ownership and you talk about a home as an investment and the young people out there who might see home prices falling and say, great, fantastic, I can get into the market. Well, they're just not doing that. And I want to cite something. I got a report from a place called Capital Economics that said for the first time since at least 1981, in the first quarter of this year, the median monthly rent was more than the median monthly mortgage payment. That said, there still appears to be some scope for rents to rise at a faster rate than earnings. Now, rents are are only rising because there's so much demand out there. So these people are looking at home ownership versus renting. And if you no longer see a home as an investment, then why do you buy it? Is it because the mortgage payment is going to be less when you do the math and you say, what am I going to be paying every month? Do I rent? Do I buy? Or are you looking at it from the perspective of how much money am I going to make on this home? Because, you know, the caller was saying, I want to make this home work for me. I want to see the value go up. I want to be able to depend on this home as an investment. Well, if you can't depend on it, if we're looking at a new normal that's going to go out. I mean, we talk about home price recovery. Recovery is one thing, as in not falling anymore.
Right.
But when are prices really going to rise again? Nobody's saying that that's going to happen anytime soon, whether it's in the next 3, 5, 7 years.
But, Diana, people used to say renting is throwing your money away. You buy, at least you're putting it into something that you, if everything works out, you will eventually own outright.
You're putting it into something if you're going to make gains on that property's value. If you're not making gains on that value, then what, you're throwing it away and perhaps even losing more than you are if you're renting.
Chip Case?
Yeah, can I make a point? I mean, we don't do this with our cars, right? Housing is also a consumer durable good. And if you think about the yield, think about buying it outright. If you bought a house outright, the yield that you get on it, it comes in the form of housing services. Now, if you buy a car, it's an investment too. You have it over a number of years, it produces a yield. And when you think about that yield, it comes to you not in pecuniary form.
The yield is the value of driving around or living
around,
in the home.
Right?
But why isn't a home just the value of the shelter? Why isn't it just a place to live and a place to be part of a community?
Absolutely. Absolutely, but those services come to you tax-free. Once you buy the house, you get this flow of housing services from the house, the same as you do from a car. And even if it doesn't appreciate, you have a pretty good investment. Think about if I gave you a stock, and I told you I would keep the dividend fixed in real terms, so that is, it comes out in the form of actual goods and services to me, with no tax on it. And by the way, if I want to borrow to leverage it up, I can do that and have the government deduct it. And similarly, if I make a gain, it's tax-free.
Of course, when you're renting, you're also getting a value. You're getting that roof over your head, same way as somebody leasing
a
car.
But
you're not paying property taxes.
You pay for it out of taxable income. If you compare, also one other point, if you look at what's happened to the value of some of these units, I just did a calculation of someone who I know waited. They were looking at a $360,000 condominium in Boston 3 or 4 years ago, and the monthly payment on it was $1,916. That same condo just sold for $252,000. The borrower borrowed $201,000 at 3.9%, and the payment is $900. So $900, you're getting down into one-bedroom walk-ups on the rental market. So at some point, that begins to – that's not the way markets work. Prices fall. It brings back some demand. God knows how long it's going to take to do that. But the process is actually behaving pretty much as you'd predict.
We're trying to get our head around this new world of American housing. After so many decades going the other way, it's not easy to understand exactly where we are. Chip Case, please stand by. Diana Olick, next. Joy joins us right now from Gainesville, Florida, a realtor, real estate agent with Allison Abels Real Estate in Gainesville. Next, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be on the air with you, Tom.
What's your market looked at like down there? We've heard a lot of woe out of Florida in recent years, maybe not as much in Gainesville as elsewhere. What's it look like now?
Yes, sir. It seems that the market is recovering a little bit. Like you said, the Gainesville market isn't quite as volatile due to us having a Sears Veterans Hospital, North Florida Regional, Shands, and the University of Florida, which draws a large investment crowd as far as condo buyers are concerned and so forth.
Okay. So have you bottomed?
Yes, sir. I would say that we have bottomed. I'm actually I'm looking at some graphs. For median home prices and sales, ever since the bubble. I came in actually in 2006 is when I started practicing real estate. So I came in at the top of everything.
What a year to start, Nax. You've had a wild ride starting in 2006.
Yes, sir.
Wow. But now, I mean, we've seen around Florida just terrible collapses in housing markets and mile after mile of nearly abandoned homes there. Now, again, Gainesville may be a little different than those more southern Florida towns, but who's buying and how much of a comeback?
Okay. Well, I would say our average buyer right now is actually we have a lot of investors purchasing places right now to turn around. And I feel like, especially in the Gainesville area, a lot of consumer confidence is coming back. For instance, I mean, 4 or 5 months ago, everyone in our office was just kind of basically sitting around waiting for, you know, new leads to show up. But we have so much work right now that we're actually having to hire new people. So there's a lot of people investing. There's a lot of people that are sick of waiting, that have been sick of waiting for the past 3 years, have been renting. And like you were saying, it's actually cheaper right now to pay a mortgage, much cheaper than it is to rent here.
Now, next, when you say investors are coming in to buy, are they buying in the hope? Are these people are hoping to flip these properties? That means they think the market's coming back. They want to buy now and sell it for some gain in a year or two? Or what's the profile?
Yes, sir. Typically, these investors are looking at condominiums between $50,000 and $100,000. And what they're looking to do is purchase them. A lot of the people are renovating them, and then they're hoping to flip them in a couple of years. In the meantime, after they've done their renovations, they're renting them out to the students here in Gainesville.
Diana, are we back in the flipping game then? Is that really going to work here?
Well, it's a different kind of flipping. I mean, when we were at the height of the housing boom, we were seeing people buy a condo one day and flip it the next week. You know, that's not happening now. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing is investors coming in with cash. Again, they're mm-hmm. not using, you know, during the housing boom, what got us into so much trouble is that they were using these loans where it was basically free for them to buy a mm-hmm. condo, flip it, and then sell it at a higher price. And now they are putting cash in, they are putting equity into these homes, and they're looking to hold on to them for a couple of years at least. So it's a different kind of investor. I would call it a healthier investor. But I don't know much about the Gainesville market. I have been watching Miami, which is really interesting because, of course, Miami was just the poster child for the condo crash in America. Mm-hmm. We used to, when we went down there to talk about the housing boom, we said that the new bird of the city was the crane because there were just so many units going up and there was no question that they would not be able to be filled. Well, now we are seeing a big demand in Miami. We're seeing sales way up. But what's interesting is prices are not following. You're seeing a surge in home sales and condo sales in Miami. But the prices are not following, and that's because you're having the banks are some of the sellers on this. They can control when they flow out some of these properties. When they don't, you've got hedge funds buying up these huge blocks of properties there that they're going to invest in, they're going to hold, they're going to rent. And so they're able to get these great deals by buying, you know, 20 or 30 units in one fell swoop. And so is that real investment? Is that real recovery? When we talk about these properties are going to be sold again at some point. I think it is. I think it's great for these investors to be able to get in there, buy up the properties, because at least they're not sitting empty in foreclosure and dragging on the bank balance sheets, et cetera. They are getting people into these and they are generating some cash flow. So honestly, and I've said this on the blog several times, is there should be more incentives for investors who are right now having to fork over the cash. The big hedge funds, they can do it. But smaller investors, there should be some incentives from the lenders to help more of these investors get in, because they are being watched more closely. They are the lending is tighter, and they're not looking to flip them so quickly.
We'll come back and look at exactly what lenders are doing and might do. Next, Joy with Allison Abel's Real Estate in Gainesville, Florida. Next, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Tom.
Listeners, we'll come back for your calls. Chip Case, Diana Olick, please stand by. We're looking at the American housing market. Here's Loudon Wainwright. He can't sell his house. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Death will part us one day in life's game of cat and mouse. Till then, let's stay together. We can't sell our house. We're in it for the long run, dear. Now I'm speaking as your spouse. Our happiness is here at home.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the American housing market and what is going on. Home prices down again in the first quarter. Banks super tight on mortgages. We'll talk about that. Everybody looking for the bottom and wondering where that may be. Diana Olick is with us from CNBC, joins us from Washington. Her blog is Realty Check. Carl Chip Case, co-creator of the Case-Shiller Index, is with us from Boston. We've got lots of feedback here. Diana, Chip, here's Holly says, yes, we're actually home shopping right now. So many amazing deals with the lower prices and many foreclosures. Rada writes in, says, first-time home buyers do not, all caps, want prices to stabilize. We want prices to keep falling. And I guess it all depends where you sit in this market. Let's go to Joe in Des Moines, Iowa. Joe, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I'm a realtor here in Des Moines. I'm actually getting ready to show some condos in
good luck.
About 10 minutes, but I wanted to let you know. You know, we have a lot of potential buyers that are renting right now, and rental rates have really gone up. And it's a very sad situation because, you know, if they were buying a home at this point, what they would be paying on a monthly mortgage would be far less than what they're paying for rent. So, in turn, we have investors out there buying up these homes at a lower price than if somebody was to just buy it to move into. So, they're buying low. Potential buyers in the future are renting high. And one of the big reasons why they're renting, a lot of potential buyers, is
yeah.
that, you know, the lender rates need to, they need to just soften up. There is too much restrictions, or a higher credit rating is required. People are still trying to dig themselves out of debt, and it's just a very sad state of affairs.
So, Joe, you're saying these renters know that they may be starting to maybe pay through the nose on the rental, but they just can't find the mortgages that will work for them, even at the home prices we see now?
Right. It's not 06 anymore, so they can't go in there like they did in 06 with a little bit higher debt load than now, because the lenders require less debt load for somebody to buy a home. And then, of course, if there's things on their credit, then they're not allowed they're not able to get approved for a loan. And it's very sad, because if the banks aren't lending to the regular working class family, then you're going to continue to see a drop in home prices. You're going to see more investors come in. You're going to see more people renting, and it's just going to be a spiral downward until such point that we get some better jobs out there, which might help some of the people who want to buy, but they have to clear up some of their credit issues.
Hey, Joe, good luck with showing that condo today, and I appreciate your call there. Diana, you hear, you know, the situation Joe's describing, rents going up, and people still can't do it. We've got people online. Here's one listener saying, how can housing recover or rebound when good jobs are a thing of the past? Well, we hope not. But declining benefits, skyrocketing health care, axing Medicare, Social Security, you know, this is all sewn together, Diana, at some level.
Yeah, and it all, when you add it together, it all equals debt. And debt is not what the banks want to see right now when they're looking to give you a mortgage. We've had the FHA premiums rise. We've had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac charging more fees, which are being passed on to borrowers from the banks. The trouble right now is that, yes, there's demand. Yes, there are people out there who would love to take advantage of these, not just the low prices, but the low interest rates. God, 4.6% on a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
I bought my first house. I was thrilled to get almost 9%. I won't say when that was, but it's a great rate to buy at if you can get it. You know, it's nice work if you can get it. But the problem is a lot of folks can't get it. Credit scores have to be much higher. And unless the banks start loosening up. But then again, you've got these regulations. I mean, we're looking at this comment period for the qualified residential mortgage and risk retention. And I won't bore you all with all of that. But it could require most borrowers to put down 20% on a mortgage. And a lot of borrowers just don't have that. So then they turn to the FHA, and the FHA is more expensive again because you're paying insurance premiums, and they may not qualify for that FHA loan again. So, again, it's got to be the banks loosening up a little bit. I'm not saying a lot. Trust me, I don't want to see the days back in the housing boom where we saw so much loose lending that it got us into this mess. But the pendulum may have swung a little bit too far to the conservative side, and that's standing in the way of real recovery.
Chip Case, I mean, Diana says be careful of it. It's boring to talk about the details. On the other hand, it's not on that risk side, because we saw risk whack the whole economy, take everything down. Nobody wants to do that again.
That's the problem. We misestimated risk, and now we're scrambling to get out from under that pile of risk that the government has assumed.
Is it too tight now, or is that really the issue? Maybe the issue is jobs. I mean, if loosening up is the way that you help people buy a home, but they don't really have what it takes to afford that home, that's not doing anybody
a favor. But it's both. It's both. I mean, certainly the economy has to stay on track. If the economy falters and falls back into a double-dip recession the way it did in 81, then all bets are off. So the economy has to keep growing, and income is the last test. But there are a lot of people who have jobs who can't get credit, or who are going to find out they can't get credit when we get this Fannie and Freddie unwound. It's just there's a lot of paper that is guaranteed by the government. In fact, if you look at the number of home sales over the last couple of years, 80% of it was guaranteed either by the FHA or by the implicit guarantee of Fannie and Freddie, even though they were in receivership.
Are you saying that's going to change down the road here?
Are they getting out of this?
And if it's all private bank decisions, what happens then?
Well, Congress is working on a program to get the risk off of its back and put it back on the market. When it gets on the market, it's going to result in higher credit costs to people, either higher credit costs or less credit. And so we haven't seen the end of that process. That's still circulating, and it remains to be seen how high interest rates are going to go to people when they're bearing the risk entirely. And a lot of that is going to be privatized. There'll still be guarantees at the low end, but it's going to be confined to the low end, and that means that standard market that Diana was talking about earlier has got some interest rates, sort of risk premiums that are going to come back onto households, as well as rising rates from our worries about inflation. So there's tons to worry about, and that's one of the reasons households look now to renting as the safer alternative.
But if rents are going up, Chip, and we've got this difficulty getting credit, I mean, there's another path here. We just have a caller I just missed here from Kansas City, Missouri, saying, you know, his daughter's moving back home in her mid-20s.
Yeah, that's happening. Tons. Households are not being formed because they're staying with mom and dad. They're doubling up. Immigrants aren't coming here because of their jobs. So that's reducing demand directly. And some of that will come back, some of it won't.
Let's go to Andy in Norwich, Vermont. Andy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Earlier there was a comment about the 20-something age group being interested in buying, but nobody's biting. And I wanted to comment that as a 27-year-old, I just got out of school.
Okay.
And my wife and I are planning on buying a house, but all of our savings are kind of spent at the moment, and we're going to have to spend a couple of years saving up.
So have you looked around at what it's going to take to maybe save up 20% in your neighborhood? If that's what that's the new standard, how many years savings is that for you, Andy?
It'll probably be, I would expect, a couple of years. We're actually moving out to Minnesota, where some of the housing prices are a little cheaper.
Right.
But my take on it is that it seems like the real impact that my age group is going to have is going to be 2-3 years down the line.
Oh, that's how long it's going to take you to save up? I guess anybody who's 20-something, it takes a minute here, Diana. Andy, good luck with that saving. But, I mean, this new generation coming on, maybe they'll spend a few years here saving up and then jump in, but they've got to have jobs to do that, Diana. And for the housing market, they've got to move into a house, not home to a house.
Exactly. And they also have to have confidence in the market. I mean, that, again, is a big player in all of this, is will they have that kind of confidence to jump into the housing market after they've seen what's happened to their parents and to some of their friends' parents, and they've had to move back home at some point? You know, part of it is credit. Part of it is prices. A lot of it is confidence. We've got investor confidence back in the market, but I don't see that we have consumer confidence. And also in the lending, one thing I want to point out is that at the end of the summer, we're going to see loan limits for Fannie and Freddie Freddie go back down again. They were raised temporarily in order to boost housing purchases.
These were
of the
for
higher end
homes.
The,
yes. What you could loan up to 600,000 or something.
Right. Well, 729,000, then reduced to 650, and then there's in some areas it's back in the 400,000 range. It depends on where you live, but you know we talk about the so-called high end, but it really depends on where you live. If you're out in California, $500,000 is not exactly the high end for some homes. And again, it's not necessarily, am I buying a McMansion? Am I really trading up to something fancy? But you have to have that trade-up market in order to have that sales market at the low end, because it's all a domino effect moving up. If people cannot move up to the bigger house, get the $500,000 or $600,000 loan, then they're not going to sell the current home they're in that may be the $300,000 home.
Chip, are bankers going to provide those bigger loans if Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac back out of that?
Not without having some risk coverage. I mean, they're going to use tighter standards, and they're going to probably require mortgage insurance, and there's going to be a whole new private insurance market develop. We don't know what it's going to look like yet, but it's going to be there because there's demand for it.
It's just hard to see how this all comes back together. I mean, it'd be one thing if we were returning to some kind of economic boom. Then you could see how it all plays out. But if we're kind of stumbling along economically, 8%+ unemployment, isn't that the bottom line here, Chip?
I think it is a big problem. I remember Diane and I talking at a conference about 3 or 4 years ago, and I had a beautiful chart that showed housing starts going up and down very regularly for 4 consecutive business cycles. And driving the economy where we wanted it to go. It was the instrument of monetary policy. All of that's really dead now. I mean, we have a whole new paradigm. And the only thing I can say with certainty is that the market will figure this out. And it always is true that at the bottom of a cliff, that you just fell off, it doesn't feel very good. But if you look back at the previous cycles, you look back at the 80-81 cycle, which by many measures was worse. We had 22% Fed funds rate. We had people saying we'll never build another home ever. And we had a double dip in starts, went below a million, went back to 1.5, down below a million. Mm. And yet, Lester Thoreau wrote a book, said the Western economies are dead. And within 2 years, we were on the path of 20 years of economic growth.
Yeah.
So I think we're kind of due for some surprises. And God knows, I've been an economist for 30 years. I've seen a lot of surprises in my life. But it's hard to say things in this environment with much certainty, because there's so many things that don't behave the way they have in the past.
It is,
and that got us into this trouble. We looked at the analysis of default and foreclosure rates that were being done by the fancy econometricians in the basements of the rating agencies and other places, that made us believe this subprime paper would be profitable business. And now we're over that, and we got to sort it out. And the market will do that.
Yeah. How long, I guess, the question. Comment here, Diana, from a listener online saying it's important to point out that markets are different all over the country. In Midwestern states that grew slowly and steadily, missing the boom, housing market is slow but not too far from what could be considered average. Plenty of new construction going on. J.H. writes in his or her area, and existing houses still selling there. What about regional variation, Diana?
Well, absolutely. All real estate is local, and we have to say that was during the housing boom and during the housing bust. We hear from folks in Houston that the market is doing very well there because it never did boom, and therefore it didn't crash the way other markets did. Local markets, some are doing better than others. D.C. is coming back a bit, but there is an overall national sentiment, and that is that when you get these national numbers, and yes, a lot of it is the media's, dare I say, fault, in that we have to report these numbers that we get. We get these national statistics, we get these regional, whether it's the West, the Northeast, you know, telling people what we're seeing, and none of it is particularly good. So that plays into consumer sentiment, and it plays into fear, and it plays into whether or not people want to go out and buy. So yes, there are certainly regional differences, but there is an overall national sentiment going on. And one thing I wanted to add to Professor Case is we put up a chart yesterday. My colleague Steve Leisman on CNBC put up a chart on housing starts showing historically that jobs and housing starts really tracked exactly on a path until the last year, when they just absolutely diverged. So this current market is not making any sense.
Well, I don't quite get that, because jobs are not really up and housing starts, don't they still track pretty well?
you usually see jobs go up, housing starts go up. Yeah. You see people getting more jobs, the builders buy more houses.
So we have more jobs now, but not
right
any
now,
robust
have,
comeback.
Exactly. You have jobs going up. You've added jobs. I don't know. What is it? The economy created 1.78 million payroll jobs since February of 2010. You are not seeing that reflected in housing starts, in new construction. Why is that?
Prior to the last 33 months, housing starts had never gone below 700,000. We've now, for 30 months, been below 500,000, been in the vicinity of 500,000. And in a market that traditionally is 2.7 million, or 2.3 million at the peak, and a million at the trough. So it's just incredible. I know that chart well.
So are people just doubling up then, Chip? Is that what it means? People just, if they're not creating households, they're living somewhere.
Well, they're not building any new, and we're still seeing the vacancy rate stubbornly high. And that means the number of households has to be going down or being, it's very, very low, the household formation rate. And so some of that's temporary, some of it's permanent. We don't know yet which it is. Immigrants, are they going to start coming? Not till we get the economy in order. And then doubling up is just a natural phenomenon. I see the kids graduating from college, half of them are living with mom and dad. That's temporary. They won't stay there, and when it comes back, it'll come back and make a difference. But right now, the inventory of vacant property is not moving, despite the fact that we're not building anything.
Diana, maybe this turns out to be great for the next generation. Lousy for those who hope they would sell their house and live on that or move on that. But maybe, you know, maybe as the economy comes back, we've got lower home prices, and a lot of 20- and 30-somethings, and they move, happily ever after.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm all about affordability and people being able to get into the market where they were priced out of the market during the housing boom and even before the housing boom.
Absolutely.
It will be better. The question is, how long is it going to take? And if we do suddenly see a recovery and prices come back in and people jump back into home buying, are we going to see inflated prices again? You know, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? I'd like to see it happen more slowly.
Well, new terrain and pretty wild for most Americans who saw something much closer to steady state for such a long, long time until it got just too wild. Diana Olick, it's always great to have you with us from CNBC. Diana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Carl Case, Chip Case, co-creator of the Case-Shiller Index. Chip, you're terrific. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Thanks, Thomas. It's a pleasure being with you.
And listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.